You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
This is Men Speak about issues dealing directly with black males. Heard exclusively on the world's greatest radio, TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio the way it should be heard. I'm Kamari O'Dye.
And I'm Richard Lundy.
Men Speak underway. Good evening. I'm Kamari O'Dye, your host, along with my co-host, Mr. Richard Lundy. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great this evening, good brother. How are you?
I'm good. We're in our last leg of Black History Month, officially. And, of course, we celebrate Black History Month every day of the year.
Each and every
365, 24-7.
Got that right.
Yes. But today we want to start off, as usual, with a poem. And this is something that's new to me. It's called Somebody Please Listen. It's by a brother named Reggie Hatchett, a.k.a. Water. When I was younger, my teachers would always tell me I made too much noise, but I was only considered a minor nuisance because boys will be boys. I always wanted to be the class clown or the kid with the quickest temper. Yeah, I guess you could say I craved attention for as long as I can remember. You may have seen me in the principal's office or even had me in your class. You may have whispered under your breath, somebody needs to whip his you-know-what. I may have made you clench your fists or even grit your teeth, but did you ever stop to think to yourself what really lies beneath? I tried to get your attention with anger, and you had security beat me down. I tried to get your attention with laughter, and you labeled me a clown. I tried to get your attention with crazy hairstyles. You told me I looked absurd. I tried to get your attention with grades, and my peers called me a nerd. I tried to shut down and appear uninterested. You told me I had ADD. So I tried to be hyper and energetic. You had the guards come and medicate me. I tried to start conversations. You told me you didn't have the time. I made myself good in sports and all you saw were dollar signs. I tried becoming a slouch. That made me unhealthy and heavy. I tried promiscuity. That made me a father before I was ready. I tried drugs and alcohol. That made me even more sad. I tried hanging with the wrong crowd, and you told me I'd be just like my dad. The few times you offered your help, it was only for a minute, because loving me wasn't convenient. Your heart truly wasn't in it. I guess you wanted me to jump for joy, be happy and accept it. Well, excuse me for being a skeptic, but I'm used to being neglected. I'm not so easy with my trust, which is sad for a child to say, but I've reached for too many extended hands that were only snatched away. So finally, I tried running away, hoping someone would find, and since you never seemed to have enough, the system gave me time. Now, this was just an illustration of the pain that people don't see. No child is going to come up to you with a sign that reads, "Help me." But they're out there in your path, and you see them every day. Most of them just slip through the cracks and slowly drift away. Our children are being ignored, neglected from the day they were born. They may be screaming out for help, but in a nonverbal form. So extend your hands and open your heart and give redemption a try. You have no idea what child could be or who you let pass you by. So the next Malcolm X, the next Tupac Shakur, or the next Muhammad Ali, or think about it if it happened to you. I wrote this because it happened to me. Somebody, please listen. And here is the news. U.S. and Mexican law enforcement officials capture public enemy number one. On Saturday, February 22nd, the U.S. Mexican law enforcement officers captured the world's richest drug cartel boss, the top drug lord in the world. For real? This guy is responsible for mass killings that total in the thousands. Sales 90% of his drugs to the United States. He has taken political corruption to a whole nother level. His operation was able to infiltrate the U.S. financial market and the criminal justice system. In other words, folks, they were corrupting judges, prosecutors, police officials, and mayors. The CIA and the FBI have stated that this drug lord, who they refer to as El Chapo, has taken the drug cartel business to another level. Sort of like what Obama did to McCain in the 2008 presidential election. Remember that, folks? The head of the FBI stated that El Chapo's organization made the original gangsters, the Cosa Nostra, look like chumps. They have songs celebrating this guy. My goodness, I wonder what will happen to this guy. Who is really behind this cartel? Will he even go to trial? Will he simply get a slap on the wrist? The plot thickens, folks. You can rest assured, if you follow the money and find out who receives the money, I'm sure you will be in for a complete surprise. We'll keep you posted. We won the battle, but the war on voting rights rages on. The Ohio Legislative Black Caucus President Alicia Reese, the NAACP President, National Action Network, Community Action Agencies, and grassroots activists kicked off the Ohio Voter Bill of Rights movement last month right here in the city of Columbus. Their objective? To strengthen the 64 Voting Rights Act by adding an amendment to the state constitution that will guarantee specific rights that cannot be eliminated or watered down by state house politicians. The statewide petition drive has, as of February 4th, 2014, they've delivered over 1,000 required petitions to the Attorney General's office, which means they still need an additional 2,000 signatures before the primaries. Now, the key items black folks may want to pay attention to are, number one, allow for greater access to vote by mail applications can be made via U.S. mail and electronically. Number two, voter ID will require voters to provide identification or the last four digits of Social Security number. Other forms of identification include U.S. passports, any form of identification issued by the state, the federal government, U.S. military, or any public or private institution of higher education. Now, if that doesn't work for you, utility bills, bank statements, paychecks, government-issued checks, as well as government IDs. Number three, time to vote gives 35 days for early voting, which can be done either in person or via U.S. mail. And finally, help working families. Get this. It requires that early voting stations be open the weekend before the election. Now, if the voters fail to ensure that this legislation is passed, it is going to get awful hot up in here. For more information, contact Sean Tucker, Executive Director of Ohio Legislative Black Caucus at 614-917-8551. And finally, in news, Detroit elects white mayor. Let me repeat that. Detroit elects white mayor. Detroit residents recently elected Mike Dugan mayor, marking the first time in 40 years the city voted in a white candidate for mayor. Now, come on, folks. What's up with this? Dugan defeated Wayne County Sheriff and former Detroit Police Chief Mr. Napoleon. The key difference between Sheriff Napoleon and Dugan was that the sheriff flat out called the appointment of the emergency manager, Mr. Orr, as illegal, whereas Mr. Dugan indicated that he was more than inclined to try to work with the guy in charge. Observers say that the fact that a city that is 83% black elected a white guy who only moved to the city of Detroit last year and had his name removed from the August primary ballot, as there were questions involving his residency, it signaled that black folks are more interested in solving the city's financial crisis than identity politics. Don't you believe this? Don't you believe this? Dugan's election comes in an unusual time, with his recent takeover by state government leaving Dugan with severely limited decision-making ability, with Orr calling the shots. Now, the newly elected mayor's claim to fame? He was credited with turning around the finances of the medical center in Detroit. However, the job facing Dugan is vastly larger than anything the hospital ever encountered. The city is right in the midst of hearings seeking bankruptcy protection to cover the city of Detroit's $18 billion debt. Let's see him work his magic on this, Brother Richard. And that's what's making news. My goodness.
Hey, brother. That's some serious stuff there, brother.
More than a mouthful.
More than a mouthful. 40 years, 83% black. What's up with that?
Yeah.
What's up with that? Are we saying that this guy can do it better? Is that the white man's ice water is colder than ours?
Right. And you listen to Men Speak. Thanks so much for being a part of the conversation. We welcome your calls, and we're going to open the phone lines in a few moments. But before we go any further, we're going to set the tone for the day's show. And we're still talking about, are we at war? Are we at war? This is part two. Before we get into that, in celebration of Black History Month, we want to recognize those people, those individuals who in world history that are often ignored or just simply forgotten. And we refer to them as agents of change. And today we're talking about a young brother born in Charlestown, West Virginia, now called West Virginia, on May 6, 1812. This brother spent his life working to end slavery. He was a successful physician and one of the first to attend Harvard Medical School. Used his influence to educate others about the evils of slavery with a number of abolitionist publications. He's the youngest of five other children. He was the son of a slave and a grandson to a prince.
Whoa.
All of his grandparents had been brought here from Africa to be slaves. But his father's father was, by some accounts, a village chieftain, and his mother's father, a Mandingo prince.
Whoa.
When he was 19 years old, he walked the 160 miles to Pittsburgh to attend church and Jefferson College, where he studied Latin, Greek, and the classics, to mention a few. It was also during this time when he became active in abolitionist activities. And by 1843, he returned his interest in medicine and founded The Mystery, which was the first African-American newspaper published west of the Allegheny Mountains. His articles about the anti-slavery movement were picked up by other papers, and his renown began to spread. But a libel suit against him forced him to sell the paper. And it was not long before Frederick Douglass got the news and quickly hired his brother to write for his paper, The North Star, in 1847. Unfortunately, due to their differing views on the course of action of the abolitionist movement, their collaboration ended after 5 years. And in 1850, he was one of three black men to enroll in Harvard Medical School. But white protests forced him to leave after the first term. After writing a series of books that spoke to the plight of African Americans, and most notably, the condition, elevation, immigration, and destiny of the colored people of the U.S., Politically Considered, which was a treatise that explored the option of blacks returning back to their native Africa.
Oh, man.
Who does that remind you of?
That's right.
Yeah, we talked about him earlier.
Earlier this month.
His Garveyism ideologies prompted him to prompted a trip to Nigeria, where he attempted to negotiate land for African Americans, as well as exploring Central America and Canada as options. Now, when the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, this brother believed that immigration might not be necessary, and he became active in promoting the use of African Americans in the Union Army, recruiting one of his own sons, Toussaint L'Ouverture Delaney.
Wow.
In 1865, he even reportedly met with Abraham Lincoln to discuss the possibility of African-American officers leading the African-American troops. Frederick Douglass's most famous quote about this young brother underscores his legacy as a spokesman for black nationalism. While Frederick Douglass said, "I thank God for making me a man," this brother said, "I thank God for making me a black man." We're talking about the one and only Martin Robeson Delaney. He died of tuberculosis in 1885 in Wilberforce, Ohio, and he has been described as a Renaissance man, a publisher, an editor, a doctor, orator, judge, U.S. Army major, political candidate, a prison inmate for defrauding the church, by the way, and the first African-American to visit Africa. The first African-American to visit Africa as an explorer and an entrepreneur. Martin Robeson Delaney, a man, a true agent of change. And that's what we're talking about today. A brother that I'm still learning a lot about.
Right, brother. That was a bad brother.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm glad that you did the research on that, brother, because, again, this just one among many. How many people have not heard of this brother?
Right.
And what all he's done. You know what I'm saying? So that, again, that goes to show, again, when we talk about we're in this war,
yeah.
There are brothers across this country that are doing stuff.
Right.
We just have to connect the dots and identify them.
I guess we can, let's introduce our in-studio guest. He's not a stranger to me, maybe a stranger to some.